Welcome to The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Each week on this program, Jeff and his guests share their expertise, personal anecdotes, and the latest industry news to keep you in the loop. Now, to provide you with insight and help you navigate the consistently changing world of real estate lending, here is your host for The Mortgage Voice, Jeff Barton.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Thanks very much for tuning in to the show. Each and every week, we're on the air trying to bring you information about mortgages, whether they refinance or purchase. There's a lot going on all the time in the mortgage market. And most of the time, what we do on the show is try to bring you information about that, period. We try not to mix in our political beliefs or our other, things that might make you cranky if you're listening. It's all about what you can afford and how much you need to pay and the money down and the rate you're going to pay for your interest rate on your loan. All of this are important for you and for anybody out there who's looking to purchase a house. It's a tough market right now, right? Because there's so limited product out there. There's so much that needs to be built. There's a lot of different price ranges that we need to have in the marketplace. And of course, there aren't. And this stems from 10, 12 years of underbuilding in the U.S. The reason it's underbuilding, there are many, many different reasons. One of the things that I think might be able to help is a lessening of some of the local requirements to build. Now, this meets with huge resistance all over the country. And by the way, I'm Jeff Barton. This is The Mortgage Voice. We're on five stations in three different states, down from Albuquerque, New Mexico. Hi to my friends down there, up to Las Vegas, Nevada. That's a great market. And all these markets are coming back, by the way. And what I mean by coming back is they're opening up restaurants, new businesses, a lot of things happening. We're going to see an explosion this summer, and we're also going to see an explosion in gas prices, another story in its entirety. But we're also in the Inland Empire in Southern California, a couple of great stations there, as well as up in Tahoe area. And hello to our affiliates and the people who are listening from them. We're also on a number of different podcasts. Darryl, you got those podcasts for us?
I sure do, Jeff. It's Spotify, Spreaker, Stitcher, iHeartMedia, Radio.com, YouTube, Google Music Play, Apple Podcasts, and Podclips.io.
Oh, excellent. Podclips.io, new group that we're associated with. And what is their address again? Do you know?
It's podclips.io.
Okay, so that's it. You just go online and look for that, and you'll see me. There's a lot of different financial people, financial shows they're bringing to, I guess, radio and podcast land, a lot of different viewpoints and variety of different programming, but I like them if you get a chance and check them out. YouTube as well, as you can see this show. We shoot the show for TV, and I guess that's our TV outlet at the moment. We used to have one out in Vegas, but not anymore. And thanks very much for tuning in. So back to, you know, what municipalities are doing and how they're trying to, maintain whatever they call as community standards really hurts low income and other kind of people getting into the marketplace. Now, last week on my LinkedIn and Facebook shows, yes, forgot to mention we do those too, about three times a week we're on LinkedIn and Facebook and we give a brief one, they call it the Mortgage Minute, brief analysis and I was talking about last, I guess it was last Wednesday, was how cities, if they were, and by the way, this is also in the $1.2 trillion rescue plan, American Rescue Plan, that was passed by Congress and is now law in the U.S. This is one of the things that we were trying to talk about on the radio, and I happen to agree with the fact that a lot of the local municipalities, and whether it's your small town or your small city or your big town or your county or wherever it is you live, somebody's in charge of whether you're going to be able to build what you want to build or remodel what you want to remodel. These people at Building and Safety and all the other departments within those municipalities, cities, and counties, they erect barriers. Whether they want to erect barriers or not, I mean, a lot of it has to do with maintaining safety or environmental quality of the area that you live in. Whatever is said to be the reason by which these cities, towns, counties do what they do, it erects barriers. And the main barrier is it's not like it's saying, hey, you can't come in because you look like this or because you believe in that. It's a cost. If you're saying in a city that you can't, unless you have a certain number of items presented to the city in order to build. That's a cost, whether it's a geology report, right? It may seem simple, but, you know, it could cost upwards of $50,000 for a geology report, depending on where you live. Well, that adds $50,000. If you live in some cities that have environmental regulations, i.e., you got to put solar panels on your house, or you have to have environmentally friendly septic, because, you know, as everyone knows, 75% of the country isn't on sewage, they're on septic. So what happens then is that you have to get those things approved. That in a city like I live in, Malibu, California, that could cost you $150,000. So if in just two categories, and again, these are not erected in for any other reason than this city has chosen that these things are important to that city to maintain the way it is currently. Well, that's $200,000. Well, in the Biden plan, they talk about, can we reduce some of these, I guess, impediments to really building low-income housing? Now, what do I mean by low-income housing? In my estimation, that doesn't mean building what is typically viewed as low-income housing is large buildings in urban areas that house poor people. That is not what I'm talking about, and that is not what's in this particular budget or bill. What I'm talking about is single-family homes, and single-family homes built in such a way by which either they're modular or you buy a kit and you assemble the kit on site. And I happen to love tiny homes. I spent, how long did I spend? A week in that van?
Yeah.
Okay. at least a week. So I have some tiny living experience. And this was a Sprinter van that I drove from one end of the country to the other. And we're talking north-south, not east-west. And boy, that's a long drive. Oh, boy. But I know what this is. So I know what 400 square feet could do in a kit that you would buy, purchase, be able to affix to the land, and have a certain number of these requirements by cities, towns, and counties reduced or eliminated in such a way by which you could replicate this. And that home assembled on site, $30,000. The one I looked at, actually, I've looked at a whole bunch. So if you're looking at giving an opportunity to somebody to get into the housing market, not in a situation where they're lumped in with a lot of different people exactly in the same situation, they're working class or they're poor or whatever this association means to people in cities and towns all over America, and I'm going to get political here for a second. During the last election, when we were looking at solutions for homelessness, solutions for no housing in the marketplace. One of the examples not given was the examples in Baltimore, Maryland. Baltimore, Maryland was called a specific couple of words by the ex-president, and mainly because of the way they were dealing with their own particular housing problems and had dealt with since the 60s and 70s. Mistakes were made all over by lumping groups of people together in certain neighborhoods. And what happens with neglect over time is you have, you know, a lot of different problems that arise because of that. It's not the issue here. What the issue here is single-family homes for people in order to have them contribute to the neighborhood, contribute to the community in a way by which everyone remains happy. So the ex-president calls Baltimore a blank, blank, blankety blank, and it is continually echoed. It's been echoed since the beginning of neighborhoods. You know, and a couple of terms that you'll hear out there, right? When we talk about how are we going to solve the crisis in housing and how are we going to contribute to each and every city being able to help, not just one area in one town or shove them over there. We need the comprehensive reform for both budgetary items for mental health issues as well as, you know, public land use and how we really use that public land to the benefit of all. Well, if we could eliminate homelessness, eliminate people sleeping on the sidewalk, ask, you know, any major city in the U.S. if they would like to be able to do that. Well, we need to spread the problem into solutions based on single-family residences and mental health mental health problems that can be helped by those departments and those people in that world. And that's how we're going to fix the problem. So if we don't do that, and again, you hear words like neighborhood character, you hear property values, all of these being negative. There were a couple of things. I have a friend who's been trying to build a project in Poughkeepsie, New York, for 30 years. I'm not kidding you, 30 years. The proposal was that they were to bring middle income, not even low income people, into the neighborhood. And these people fought them because it was a higher density than what they wanted. And they fought them and they fought them and they fought them. I don't mind fighting them. But at some point, you got to say, we're all in this solving this problem. We can't escape it. And this part of housing and, yeah, we got a lot of work to do. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Thanks very much for listening. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Barton. We'll be right back with more in just a moment. For more information on today's topic, email Jeff Barton at info@malibufunding.net. Now, back to The Mortgage Voice with your host, Jeff Barton.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Thanks very much for tuning in, for listening each and every week, bringing you answers to questions that you probably have about, hey, what is the rate? How can I maintain these really low rates? But I wasn't ready to buy 3 months ago. Now I am ready to buy. What are the rates today? Well, I'll tell you. The rates today, 30-year fixed, 3.25%. The 15-year is at 2.72. The FHA loan is at 2.75. Jumbo product is at 3.32, and the 5-1 ARM is at 2.64. The yield on the 10-year is at 1.62. Okay, so we have seen a little bit of a reduction in the last week. We saw 7-8 weeks of rising interest rates, and now we're sort of in a holding pattern. So this long-term yield holding pattern that we talked about many times on the show over the last 90 days to half a year, being between half a point up to 1.62%. Well, we're right at the top of the 10-year yield that we've been looking for in terms of what the range is and what it has been since COVID. So where are we going to head? Do we need to see more evidence about either inflation or the need for other people to get into the U.S. market and get happy with that yield? Or do we need to see the yield increase in order to attract foreign buyers for U.S. debt? These are the things that have not really shaken out. But there's a number of factors going into the economy. I mentioned earlier about the gas prices. We're going to see, you know, pretty high gas prices this summer. One of the reasons is because the economy is, you know, really poised to get people back to what they want to do. And in order to do that, well, in a state like, let's just choose any state west of the Mississippi, you got to get a car and you got to drive. So there's a lot more people on the road. Let's see, what are we at? 30% mask? 30% vaccines now for the country?
They're saying of the adults, it's like half.
Oh, okay. So, you know, if we're looking at June or July, let's say Fourth of July holiday, everybody's going to be hitting the road. And as I said in an earlier segment, I was out and about driving. I drove from Los Angeles to Seattle last week, right?
I was just going to say, I talked to you while you were on the trip, but the math doesn't make sense to me because I understand there's about half the country that doesn't want to take it anyway. So it must be half of the people that are willing to take it.
Well, I think it's 112 million have at least had one shot, and that's a third of the country of 330 million. Yeah. So it's, you know.
Maybe it's half.
Yeah, maybe it is. Half of adults. I just don't know. So I'm making this drive. I drove from L.A., as I said, up to Seattle. And prices for diesel, wow. They're unbelievable. So we know that gas is heading that way because of the demand on gas. And it's not just here. It's worldwide, right? And we know that production was cut and that the difference between producing gas, refining gas, and then transporting gas in the three areas that need to have the supply chain filled in order to, you know, keep people happy who want to do those sort of things, it takes 6 months. So if they started today, and, you know, they want to see gas prices high, right? They didn't make any money for a year. So the oil companies and those people who deliver gas and those people who are at the retail, they're all looking for a big year. And this adds to the inflation, inflationary worries, right? High gas prices are definitely a problem. If, you know, we're used to $2, $2.50 in most of the country, and now we're going to see $3.50. And in California, we might see $4.50. Yeah, that's a problem. So all of these things added into the economy, yeah, inflation is a problem. And that's one of the reasons why you see the demand on U.S. debt kind of stalled here. We're not seeing the demand rise. We're not seeing it fall. We did see it fall, which is why the yields rose to what they are now. But right now, we're not quite sure what's happening. The economic numbers that we always get on a monthly basis are based on what we saw, not what we're going to see. What we're going to see is what the stock market does. The stock market bets on tomorrow, and the economic indicators look at the past yesterday. So where are we today? I would say we're between optimism and rising costs, and that's kind of where we are today. So marketplace for your home. You're a couple. You're a single person. You're a group. You all want to get into the housing market. You're thinking, okay, now is the time. Let's go. Millennials, sound like you? It should. You're the biggest buying block out there, and you are now hitting the market strong. You want to buy. But you can't buy because there aren't enough houses out there. So in a previous segment on the show, we talked about low-income housing. Well, let's talk about medium-income housing. Let's see, you know, there's a guy, a gal out there making $150,000 a year. Well, that's pretty good money. But depending on where you live, it's going to, you know, be difficult in certainly some areas to be able to afford a house today. Now, we talked last week about how prices have risen across the country year to date and year over year. Year over year in most of the country, we're looking at 10% increase in cost of housing if you want to buy. That is expensive. And then you coupled that with, of course, rising mortgage rates, which we had for the first part of the year, last part of last year and first part of this year. You see expensive housing out there. And ask any realtor out there, you know. Real estate has 5, 6, 7 offers on most properties. Anything that's priced reasonably is going to have that. Now, in my own particular situation, got a house on the market in probate. Now, probate is a different animal entirely. However, multiple offers on that, and then you got to go to court, and then the court's got to confirm it. But they do accept offers 10% above, and those people that make that offer have to bring cash to the court date. Now, we haven't yet got a court date. We got an accepted offer, but we're looking for, you know, we're probably going to have competing bids at the court just because it's a reasonably priced property in a neighborhood that people want to buy in. Now, that is, that's not easy. And you're out there and you're millennial and you're trying to figure it out. I get you and I feel for you. So building more housing, getting into any kind of housing. What's going to happen when we hit, September 31st, right? It's probably going to get pushed to the end of the year, and I think it might have already. This is the moratorium on rent so that you don't have to pay your rent, and the moratorium on mortgages so you don't have to pay your mortgage. That has been extended from September, I think, all the way through to the end of the year, or at least it will probably. But at one point, those people are going to come due. Those mortgages are going to come due. One update there, and I have it here, the delinquency rates. The delinquency rates, the foreclosure rates. Okay, the foreclosure rates are up, but they were up because we have, you know, seriously delinquent properties that just can't hold off anymore or just, you know, aren't going to be able to regain their mortgage footing. But for delinquencies, 30 days or less, 60 days or less, 90 days or less, they've actually dropped. And a lot of people have exited the moratorium on mortgage payment, the forbearance programs. We had, I think it was last week, 175,000 people exit that particular program, and less than 4% of the mortgages out there are in forbearance. Now, when this started, we had about 5.5%. So that's a good thing. obviously, those people who can afford to get back in the market, and everybody who is not working, who will get back to working, that's happening too. So they're trying to play the timing right. Nobody wants to kick somebody out of their house. One, it's immoral, and two, it's, you know, really difficult. If you're in some states like in California or New York or I can't even think of another state right now, but certainly Washington, Oregon, a lot of states in the Midwest have huge protections for people that both the servicer and the original lender have to go through before they can actually foreclose on a property. And with increasing equity in every property, nobody wants to kick somebody out and have them lose that equity. We're trying to work with people here in order to make sure that they're in property. Again, back to the millennials, what are you going to do about housing when you need it? You're making good money, $150,000, $200,000 a year with yourself or somebody else. How are you going to get into the housing market? Yeah, it's a problem. Let's see. There's new qualified mortgage rules that are coming out. What is a qualified mortgage? Anything sold to Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. I'll try to get into this in maybe a later segment of the show. But it's important to know because the old debt-to-income ratio, 43-36, it's going out the window. They're using a new matrix to be able to approve loans and have them bought and sold by Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Barton. We'll be right back with more in just a moment. For more information on today's topic, email Jeff Barton at info@malibufunding.net. Now, back to The Mortgage Voice with your host, Jeff Barton.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Thanks very much for tuning in, listening to the show. We bring to the show a lot of times different, you know, different points of view and different thoughts about what we're doing. In many of the different areas of the country, there are ways that people look at their mortgage and how they can take advantage of the property they're in different ways. Certainly age groups can, certainly ethnic groups can, and we try to supply all the information to all these different groups. One of the main elements of when you get older, as I am, now 66, is to try to take advantage of the equity built in your house. And over the last couple, 3 years, we've seen equity jumps of, you know, upwards to 10% a year per house. So how do you take advantage of that, especially when you're not working? And I brought Adam Potavie to the show again from Finance of America to give us a handle on that and tell us a little bit more about what's going on in the reverse area. Adam, how are you?
I am well, Jeff. Thanks for having me on again.
Thank you very much for coming on. Okay. Now, there are a lot of newbies to the show all the time, and explaining what a reverse is probably the best way to start so that they can get a handle on, you know, exactly some of the options they might be looking at.
Right, right. So, I mean, reverse in a nutshell is the ability for a senior homeowner to tap into some of that hard-earned cash that they paid into the house. And there's not a repayment that's required, whatever is borrowed, but ultimately it is money borrowed that doesn't require repayment, but a repayment is welcomed. The ability not to repay is a luxury or that's given to senior homeowners. So, for as long as they can make payments, they should, and I recommend it because, you know, that way you slow down the negative amortization on the loan. But ultimately, we're a bank. So when we lend money to borrowers from their equity, it is literally just that, money being lent, whatever money is actually used, the interest and the interest on the money would eventually be paid back to us when the borrower passes. It's really that simple. And Jeff, something I wanted to mentioned before even we jump on the call is the release of our brand new product that literally went out about 13 days ago now, April 1st, and no, that's not an April Fool's joke. We created a first of its kind, a hybrid of a forward and reverse mortgage. It essentially, it starts like a forward loan where the borrower is required to make payments for the first 10 years. And that payment usually is about 70% less than the borrower's current payment on their conventional mortgage. But for the first 10 years, that payment is, in fact, required. But after 10 years, it goes away and it turns into a traditional reverse mortgage. So we call it a retirement mortgage. It allows borrowers to sort of ease their way into retirement. So we sort of have this new unicorn on the streets, still brand new. I mean, first time I'm sure it's heard on radio.
Hey, that's an interesting product. So you're saying that you start off with a regular mortgage, and you make your payments, and then after 10 years, it goes into a reverse, and you don't have to do anything?
That's exactly right. But why would somebody opt in for it and not just refi for the first 10 years? It's because the payment is literally about 70% less than whatever the current 30-year amortized payment is on their mortgage. And the one caveat it is that we require the borrower's leftover term on the mortgage to at least be 10 years, because the last thing we want to do is take somebody that's almost paid off their house
right. And
give them another 10 years to pay.
Okay, so tell us, who are you aiming this program at? Somebody who's 50 years old? Somebody who's 45 years old? I mean, obviously, 62 is the cutoff for being able to qualify for a reverse. So obviously, I guess you're looking at somebody who's 52, 53, 54 years old who might look at this as a way by which they can ease into retirement and have more options when they do so.
Exactly right. And really, this was the product was birthed from the very, from actually a research paper that was done by, a Wharton Pension Council. They were doing a research paper. It was called "The Market for Reverse Mortgages Among Older Americans." And here are some of the findings. I actually was able to pull it quickly for you. That 50% of seniors going into retirement have a mortgage.
Yep.
That's one. Two, that the typical mortgage payment ranges between 30 to 50% of their monthly income, I think, expected. Now, here's an interesting one. In 2018, over 1 million mortgage applicants over age 62 were rejected as their debt-to-income ratios were too high.
Right.
And here's another interesting one. There were about 1.3 million mortgages for borrowers over 62. 1.3 million individuals who are reverse mortgage eligible opted in to refi their existing mortgage for another 30 years or whatever. And why would someone in their mind want to refinance their existing mortgage? Usually, it is to reduce payment. Yes, it is to, in many cases, reduce the interest rate too. Like, I get that. But if the rate were coming up and the payment was coming down, we would certainly not see so many refis happen. So that's what this product is birthed from. Like, we see the amount of individuals are looking to retire, but at the same time, they are struggling with making their ends meet based on the sort of income they're generating and the payments for the mortgage. So we came up with a product that allows the 70% reduced payment for 10 years, and after which it goes away completely.
Okay, so this is, it's very interesting. Obviously, there's a stigma still attached to reverse itself. Is this a way by which to re-educate people on the type of loan and type of product that the reverse really is?
I mean, it is, and we also see this as an opportunity for someone who maybe would absolutely refuse to listen to anything that has to do with reverse mortgage to maybe begin having those conversations with themselves, with their financial advisor, with their, you know, with their spouse. Because at the end of the day, like, we can start by looking at this equity avail product and
right.
recommend to the borrower, hey, here's an alternative. I can't qualify you, or maybe even though you qualify for a conventional refinance, here's what equity avail looks like for you. But wait, if this is enticing, if you like this, look what a reverse can do, to where you literally could have no payment. Now, if you wanted to make a payment, you could continue for as long as you can, but then once you can't, you just stop making it. And in many ways, like, my parents have a reverse mortgage, and they are literally paying an interest payment every month.
Right.
They just don't like the idea of you know, negatively, their loan negatively amortizing and interest upon interest. So they just feel right about, hey, when they go, when their home passes, from the proceeds of the sale, they would just pay back whatever truly was borrowed. And that's it. Nothing more, because the interest payment was made monthly.
Now, I know when you get a reverse mortgage, just a flat reverse mortgage, you need at least 50% equity in the property. In a loan like this, where you're converting, really, or you're just moving from a conventional loan to the reverse product, is the same equity in the home required?
That's a great question, Jeff. So actually, this equity avail product is allowed for individuals that do not qualify equity-wise for the reverse mortgage. The equity avail product, LTVs, are more aggressive.
Okay.
So if the reverse LTV on average is, you know, 50 to 60%, the equity avail LTV is closer to, you know, 65 to 85, depending on age.
I see. Okay. Hey, listen, we're almost out of time. We've got about a minute left. Do you want to shout out a phone number for somebody who has questions on reverse, if you would?
Absolutely.
Great.
Absolutely. 413-231-4854 is a direct number. Please feel free to call. I'm happy to discuss product details, anything at all, reverse mortgage related. 413-231-4854, and I'm down here in San Diego.
Excellent. Adam, thanks very much for coming on the show. Always appreciate it. And that's a terrific product. We'll try pushing it on all our channels as well. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you very much. It's Adam Potifi from Finance of America. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Barton. We'll be right back with more in just a moment. For more information on today's topic, email Jeff Barton at info@malibufunding.net. Now, back to The Mortgage Voice with your host, Jeff Barton.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Thanks very much for tuning in, for listening to the show each and every week, bringing you information that is, you know, not readily available. I mean, yeah, you can research it. You can go to the different websites. You can go to Housing Wire. You can go to Mortgage News Daily. You can go to, you know, CNBC, there's 100 of them out there. But you have to comb it through it all, find out what's relevant to you. We try to do that for you. Mortgages for an individual trying to buy a house. We focus on that. We bring you rates, obviously. We try to bring people from different lenders, which we have and we will continue to do. And we also bring you program-specific answers. Let's say you want a certain type of loan. You want a VA loan. You want I don't know, a 7-1 ARM, an ARM product. They're not as in vogue as they used to be, but they were at one time a very popular product. There's no more NEG-AM. There's no more, difficult loans that will get us all in trouble by, I guess, defaulting. But one of the areas that we get into and we talk about, and I love this product, and we just had a guy from Finance of America on to talk about what they're doing new, is the reverse mortgage. And there's a lot of stigma about it, but I think it's a great product. And if you want to look at it in a way that I look at it, it's like a forward mortgage, i.e. 30-year fixed, except that you don't make payments. And those particular payments come out of the equity in the home. You can make payments. You could make lower payments. But it's the exact type of loan, and you maintain control of your property. To talk more about that, because she's the expert, and I'm not, as Nina Penny, Malibu Funding's own, and she joins us now. Nina, how are you?
I'm doing great, Jeff. Thanks for having me.
Thank you very much for coming on the show. Okay, so today is reverse day, as I think I told you, and I wanted to continually talk about the product itself, the advantages of the product, and you know, how it can benefit people going into their retirement years who may not have the greatest pension in the world or the greatest, money coming in after they retire, but who do have equity in their homes. Explain a little bit about it and what's happening in the market today.
Well, basically a reverse mortgage is simply an FHA loan that you're not obligated to make payments on. You can if you want, but you're not obligated to do so. You just have to pay taxes and insurance. And other than that, if you want to make a payment, you can. But I think today what I would like to talk about, Jeff, is the difference between a fixed rate and the adjustable rate.
Okay, do it.
How's that?
That's great. Let's do it.
Okay, so the fixed rate is exactly what people imagine it would be. It's a fixed rate. So we have fixed rates that go that as low as 3.1 to 4%, okay?
Uh-huh.
But here's the difference is that the fixed rate, when you go to sign, you're going to get a check and be on your way. It's a closed-ended loan, which means that if you make a payment into the reverse mortgage on a fixed rate, you will not have access to that funds anymore. It's simply going to go down and reduce the principal that you owe. Now, the adjustable rate, even though people are very fearful of adjustable rates, there's a lot of reasons why the adjustable rate is a beautiful product.
Okay.
Number one, it's an open-ended loan, which means that if you make payments into the reverse mortgage, you'll be able to tap back into that money that you paid in at a later date. Okay, so it's an open-ended loan.
Okay.
Also, on top of that, it has something that we call a growth rate attached to that line of credit. And that growth rate is, well, Jeff, I like to say it's very sexy.
Okay.
It is so appealing to so many people that when they learn about it, they don't even think twice about the fixed rate product. Because anytime you make a payment into the loan, into your line of credit, it has a growth rate, which will increase the amount of funds that you can tap into later.
Give us
and
an example.
You just can't have enough funds.
Right. Give us an example. Give us a $200,000 reverse mortgage example of how that would work on the non-fixed rate product, adjustable.
Okay, so on the adjustable rate, let's say you have a $400,000 house. I'm just going to use rough numbers so I keep them straight
in
my head.
Sure, right, good.
Let's say you have a $400,000 house.
Okay.
I like to say, you know, about 50% equity that you can tap into. So that means you'd have $200,000 available. Let's say you have a mortgage balance of $100,000. The reverse mortgage will come in and pay off your first loan. Okay? Now you have no mortgage payment that you need to make. Just pay taxes and insurance. You'll have an additional $100,000 on the line of credit. How you take that money is up to you. You can take it in a lump sum. You can take it as a term payment, like an annuity, however you want it. But whatever money you don't tap into on that line of credit will sit in there and get accumulate with the growth rate.
Okay, and the growth rate, so, though, is based on you paying into the mortgage as you go along?
The growth rate is based upon the amount of money that you have available to you that you're not using.
Oh, I see.
Sitting
okay.
there in like a line of credit. Now, the growth rate is approximately 0.5% less than the rate that your interest is being accrued on. So, hypothetically speaking, if your interest rate is 3%, your growth rate on the amount of money sitting in that line of credit would be 2.5%.
Is that per annum, every year?
Yes.
So your growth rate is 2.5% a year on a 3% mortgage, reverse mortgage, pay or not pay, it's still growing as long as you have money.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, it is.
And the more money that and when you're paying into it, imagine the money that you're paying into your loan, you're reducing your balance, increasing your line of credit. Now rates go up, your interest rate goes up, but guess what? Your line of credit is also going up.
Okay, let's talk two things. One, about the rate itself. Adjustable rate mortgages have really not gone up in decades. They really closely resemble what the regular 30-year fixed rate is. And I don't know what affects that rate, but to convince or to explain that, how would you explain that to a borrower in terms of both the growth rate on the principal amount of money that you're not using in your line of credit, and also the rate itself, the safety of that particular rate?
On the adjustable rate?
Yes.
You know, it's really hard. I am a visual kind of person.
And
you know, anyone that is visual has a really hard time seeing it. But, you know, over the years, I've come up with a bunch of props that when I sit with people, I kind of show it to them. And it totally makes sense. It's very hard to imagine what a growth rate looks like in your mind.
Mm-hmm.
Usually once I meet with people and I kind of go over it and I show it to them, they visually get a concept of how it is and are pretty blown away by it.
No, it's an amazing product. Hey, now that you're there, tell people how to get in touch with you so that you might be able to do that for them.
Sure. My telephone number is 480-635-2410. And I usually spend about 1 week a month in California, and my week will be coming up week after next. Maybe we can meet up. Jeff. I'd love to see you.
Now, you're also doing a number of educational videos. I know you've done some for Malibu Funding, and anybody who wants to see those for The Mortgage Voice, just go to YouTube, The Mortgage, Jeff Barton, The Mortgage Voice, and you will see them there. Where else might they get you on video?
Well, I'm working on that right now, Jeff.
Okay,
so
great.
You know what? When I finish up that Rufus videos, you know what? Maybe we can put them on your website for
you. Oh, that'd be awesome. No, it really would be, because this is the type of product. Obviously, the innovation and the way by which companies are offering different products all the time changes, right? And to take advantage of that, it not only takes a little bit of faith, but it takes somebody to explain it, and you're the person that can do that.
And we have some great products coming out. I know we're running out of time, but we have a loan for people that maybe don't have enough equity in their home presently.
Right.
And have at least 10 years left on their loan, that they can do a conventional, it's sort of a conventional loan for the first 10 years, and then it rolls right into a reverse loan. So that's a new product, too, that we have out.
Oh, that sounds
exciting things, Jeff.
No, I like that very much. Yes, Adam talked a little bit about it from Finance of America. He was very high on the product as well. Nina?
Adam's a great man.
Yep, he's really good, and he was good at explaining it. So I appreciate you coming on the show. I want to get some updates. There's a lot of interest in what we're doing for reverse, and you're the go-to. So I appreciate you coming on the show.
Thanks, Jeff. It's been a pleasure. Thanks for having me again.
Thanks, Nina, very much. That's Nina Penny from Malibu Funding, and I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Barton. We'll be right back with more in just a moment. For more information on today's topic, email Jeff Barton at info@malibufunding.net. Now, back to The Mortgage Voice with your host, Jeff Barton.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Thanks very much for tuning in from Albuquerque, New Mexico, to Las Vegas, Nevada, certainly in the Inland Empire, the IE, San Bernardino, and Riverside, California, as well as up in the Tahoe area. Welcome and thanks for listening. And look, if you want to hear us, you want to see us, you want to podcast us, please do so. Daryl, you got those podcasts available for us?
I sure do, Jeff. It's Apple Podcast, Google Music Play, Spotify, Spreaker, Stitcher, iHeartMedia, Radio.com, YouTube, and PodClips.io.
PodClips.io, new to our grouping of podcasts. Please go to there, see what we're doing. There's a lot of new things happening on that. It's pretty cool. Also on YouTube, if you want to see the show, go to YouTube. We have a show that, it's just hundreds and hundreds of different shows, answers and questions and history of what we're trying to do. We're developing a new format by which to bring you segments of the show more easily and easily available to you upon search. So all this is coming. Exciting stuff. 2021 is a big year for the mortgage business, but it's not going to be as big as 2020. I read a report today that said that 2020 was the biggest year ever. $3.5 trillion in mortgages, two-thirds of that were in the refinance area. That's a lot. Oh, my gosh, $3.5 trillion? Jeez, these trillion-dollar numbers. A lot of these numbers are sort of funny money to me. I don't really understand it. How many zeros is in a trillion? Do you really know?
It's a trillion is 1,000 million.
1,000 million is a trillion.
Yeah,
okay, very good. So.
No, that's a billion.
No, it's a hundred. Oh, yeah, 1,000.
Yeah.
1,000 million is a billion.
Right. So 1,000 billion is a trillion.
Okay, now that's a lot of money.
That's a stack. It's a stack of dough.
So you're out there and you're working hard and you're trying to figure it all out yourself. I get it. Because the numbers are staggering. And again, in the mortgage industry last year, the biggest. Now, a couple of the numbers in the mortgage industry. So the mortgage industry itself usually runs on a margin, and usually it's not as thin as the supermarkets, which is about 3%, right? That's what their margin runs at, and that's millions, or not millions, but certainly 100,000 products they try to sell. In the mortgage industry, we run about 50 basis points. What is a basis point? Okay, so 1% of the loan is 100 basis points. So a half a percent of the loan is, 50 basis points. So if you have a $100,000 loan, a half a percent is how much? Come on, everybody out there. Right, exactly, $500. So That's not that much margin and when you have that big of a loan. Well, last year, the margin for those particular products was 150 basis points. That's 1.5%. So three times what the normal is in a normal market was last year in 2021. I often quote our friend Warren Buffett, who says, look, if it's raining gold, put out a bucket. And, you know, every industry has their day. Last year was the mortgage industry. But it isn't always like that. And what we're going to have now is a contraction, maybe not this year, maybe towards the end. Certainly when we see people out there gallivanting and spending money this summer, and believe me, it's going to happen. The pent-up anxiety, the total country, I guess, angst is going to – when you hear – or whatever that blowout sound is, that's the country exhaling because they're out there having fun, enjoying them. Maybe an outdoor concert. Maybe you're traveling to the beach. Maybe you're just doing what we always want to do every summer when we get out there with the family and friends. That's going to happen this summer, and it's really going to help in many ways. The psychological way it's going to help is it's going to lessen the severity on all your social media. You're not going to be on social media if you haven't, you know, a cookout with your neighbors and friends. It's just not. And that was one of the problems with last year in the election and all the other stuff that went along with that that made people so far crankier than they normally are. But I've noticed it on the highways. I've noticed it at the supermarket. I've noticed it a lot of places. People are creeping back into life. As we were talking off air, maybe a little bit on air, about 120, 130 million people have at least one vaccine in the U.S. Now, that's an amazing number. That's about a third of the country. All this is good, but what does it mean in the mortgage market? Are we going to see the cost of housing come down and the cost of mortgages stay low? They're currently up, obviously, quite a bit from last March, April, May. But they're not up that much. I mean, when we're talking still about getting into a fixed rate 30-year mortgage for 3.25%, well, there was a time when you would have thought that was the lowest rate you've ever seen in your life. When it was true, and it still is. Great products, a lot of people looking out there to get you into a loan, especially if you're trying to buy that house you want to buy. I know it's difficult. I know you're looking around. I know. We spend all day on the show a lot of times talking about the difficulty of the housing market because of the lack of housing. What can we do to fix that? How can we get people off the street and into housing? There's a lot of pressure to get that done. Now, Joe Biden has, now whether you like Joe Biden or not, I don't know, Uncle Joe or whatever, Sleepy Joe, whatever you want to call him. He's okay. You know, one of the things that I think he's done right is try to address housing. But like every problem in America, he's trying to address it, which I don't know if that's possible. But in the housing area, okay, so in this new bill that just passed out, the COVID rescue plan, I think is what it's called, or something close to that. I can't keep up with all the names, you know. From the last name I actually could keep up with was the one for the vaccine. What was it called? Warp Speed?
Warp Speed.
Yes, I'm a big Trek fan. So, yeah, Warp Speed stuck in my head. But this one, I don't know, housing... The Housing COVID Rescue Plan, which is the part of it that deals with housing, we talked a little bit about exclusionary zoning laws in previous segment. In this segment, talk a little bit about what Biden has asked for, and we talked about it on the LinkedIn and the Facebook show, was creating a new way to value credit scores through the CFPB. It's part of the effort by which to gain access to the housing market by more people. I.e. people who are making, let's say you're making 30 grand a year. That's 15 bucks an hour. Currently, that's a lot of states' goal is to get to $15 an hour. But let's say you're in a place where you're making 15 bucks an hour. 15 bucks an hour times 40 hours a week times 52 weeks is $30,000. Now, $30,000 times two people, if that's what it is $60,000. Can you think of any place in the country where $60,000 will be able to afford you a home? The answer to that is no. So what have they done? They've tried to tweak FHA. They've tried to build in other avenues by which down payment assistance programs, all ways by which to get you in that house. One of the ways that is this creation of a new way to look at credit. People who are poor, people who are at the low end of the economic spectrum, a lot of times don't have the same credit as to somebody who's got enough money to pay all their bills. Now, I'm not saying that's across the board, but that's the way lenders look at it. If you're lending money to someone, you want to know if they pay their bills. That's essentially what it is. Well, the three major credit bureaus, Experian, Equifax, and TransUnion, they look at the reporting of debt, your debt, and your repayment schedule. Huh? Are you on time? Do you pay every month? Do you just pay the minimums? You're paying it down? Do you have a mortgage? Have you been late? All of these things factor in. Are you applying for a ton of credit cards? That's a negative. There's a lot of different ways, as I say, and they come out with three different scores. A couple of the things that don't get included in that number, and they should be, how it gets reported is another question entirely, and self-reporting has always been a way by which you could do it, but it's cumbersome, and disputing anything on your credit report is difficult. Well, the CFPB, under Biden's direction, he wants them to set up their own database, their own credit database, give their own score to consumers. So a couple of things that don't get reported. Your rent. You pay your rent? Let's say you pay your rent every month on time and have been doing so for 5 years. But you do it in cash because that's the way you roll. You don't do it with a check because you didn't have a checking account. Or you got into trouble with your bank at one time because you had medical expenses, lost your job, and you were overdrawn in your checking account. And that's a whole nother issue. Believe me, if that happens to you, it is really difficult to get a banking account. So if you're in that crowd, but you are paying cash to your rent and been doing so for, 3, 4, 5 years, that should count toward your credit score. There are a lot of other ways by which you can help in that way, but that's the way Joe Biden is trying to help. Anyway, that's Uncle Joe for you. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Really appreciate you listening this week, and we will see you next time.
You're listening to The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Barton. For more on today's topic, visit www.malibufunding.net.